Hi everyone, this is Amira Adawi, your host of Beauty and Wellness Talk. This podcast is intended to raise awareness on the issues of colorism, skin lighting practices, and chemical exposures, as well as improve the health outcomes of communities of color. Our guest today is Cham Lorenzo from Ban Toxics in the Philippines. Cham, welcome to the show today. Can you please introduce yourself?
Yes, hello, Amira. So, hello, everyone. I am Cham Lorenzo. I am a research associate from Ban Toxics. We are an NGO based in the Philippines, and we are working on chemicals issues.
Yeah. So, Cham is with us today to discuss about how the issues of colorism, skin lighting practices, and chemical exposure is impacting in the Philippines. As you all know, skin lighting, it's a huge global issue, and that's impacting many communities globally. And so Philippines is one of the countries that's experiencing huge skin lighting products and chemical exposure problems. And so we're really glad to have Cham on the show today. So Cham, could you a little bit elaborate more about who you are, the work that you do, and how you get into working the issues of skin lighting products?
Oh yeah, so of course we are Ban Toxics again, and we work on issues of chemicals, and this includes a number of chemicals such as mercury, lead, asbestos, anything related to chemicals. Actually, our organization works on it. So in the context of skin lightening creams with mercury content, this is a pressing issue, not only for the organization, but for the Philippines, because during our Minamata initial assessment, which was conducted in 2018, we identified mercury-added products as the second largest source of mercury emissions. And under the category of mercury-added products, skin lightening creams that contain mercury is the biggest a contributor to mercury emissions. So I believe it accounts for as much as 70 to 80% of the total mercury added products in the Philippines. So as an organization who's working on chemicals issues such as mercury, skin lightening creams became a focal point of our work ever since we started working on mercury.
So did you say 80% of skin lighting products is used in the Philippines?
Maybe the best way to state it is that out of all the mercury added products which were recorded in the Minamata initial assessment of the Philippines, 80% of those are skin lightening creams.
Wow, that's very high. And you know, many people globally don't even know that that's an issue in many countries, but especially in the Philippines. And so so far how were you addressing the issue of skin lighting and chemical exposure? So before I even get to that, why this is an issue in the Philippines, how is the colorism, what is the root causes of this issue in the Philippines when you look at the cultural and communities?
Yes, Amira. So I'd like to go back first to a statement you said earlier. I'll just add that skin lightening creams, which take 80% of the total mercury added products recorded in the Philippines, means that it is bigger and larger than dental amalgam, than switches, relays, and light bulbs combined. That's how big the issue with skin lightening creams in the Philippines is. And of course, it goes back to your point that it may have something to do with our perspectives on colorism. In the Philippines, of course, we have brown skin, but in the media, people with lighter skin is still perceived as better. You know, we have in the Philippines, actually, we have shows like Kirara. So that's a local show in the Philippines where she is a person with dark skin. But the story arc eventually has her becoming whiter, becoming prettier. So that's one of the more famous TV shows in the Philippines. So we can see that colorism is still very, very present in our media portrayals. And darker skinned individuals are still considered a tier below whiter skinned individual. And this is more so with women. And even with the resurgence of actresses, newer, younger actresses with brown skin, we can say that traditional media, which is still run by the older people, they still focus on lighter skin. And as a whole, our media, our perspectives on racism has not, I believe, I guess, it has not yet progressed as a whole. Because like I told you earlier in a conversation last week, blackface is still very, very common in traditional Philippine media. And laughing at not only people with darker skin, but with other stuff is still very commonplace in the Philippines. So aside from the media, this in the home, this is manifested in various ways. You know, colorism is still manifested in a number of ways. So for example, for women, there is pressure to be to have lighter skin. I remember as a kid, a lot of soap brands in the Philippines, such as Silka Papaya, were focused on whitening, you know, and other products such as glutathione were derived all maybe around 15 years ago in the Philippines, because the general perspective is still that whiter is better. And for boys, this is not so apparent, but we still feel the effects of the colorism. For example, in Philippine provinces, it's a common thing for parents to say that, hey, you have to choose a girlfriend with lighter skin, because you should think about the kids. If you have kids with someone with dark skin, your kids will have dark skin too. So it is manifested in a number of ways, and it even seeps through education. So for example, in the Philippines, of course, I believe everybody knows this, but we were colonized by a lot of countries. And when we were colonized by the Spanish, for example, we use the term mestizo to refer to prestigious minorities of mixed ancestries, which means that they are a mix of Spanish and Filipino. But now, mestizos, the term is still used to refer to attractive people with lighter skin. So we can see whichever way the racial, the historical connotations of those terms and how they impact our views of skin color, but I'm not an expert on that, but I believe that's one manifestation of how we as a society perceive skin color.
Yeah, Jam, that's really excellent points that you mentioned. And you know, there's a lot of similarities around you know, other countries who are also experiencing colorism, which, you know, one of the things that you mentioned is, you know, marriage and having kids and how that associated with skin color. And that's very common with, you know, many communities that live in the U.S. That we work with, and similarly also in Africa and also Latin America. So it's a very common a problem that's impacting many communities globally. And then also you mentioned education. That is another huge thing. So in terms of the education, is it because of colorism bullying happening within schools, or is it because of even like how kids are enrolled in schools associate with colorism?
Yeah, I guess in the Philippines, it's more so about bullying. You know, since at the home, we're taught that at the home and through media, we are taught that children with black skin are to be made fun of. So I remember when I was in high school, and I guess I was a little bit guilty of this, we used to bully kids who had skin who were darker than ours, which is very, very troubling, because I myself have brown skin. So it seeps through a lot of stages in your education. So some teachers may also be teaching, when teaching the concept of beauty, they may also teach that whiter skin are usually better looking. So it goes a lot of ways, I guess, if we are to talk about education.
That's really sad that it's happening in the Philippines as well. So in terms of the, you know, like colorism deeply rooted in the Philippines, is it different in different regions, different provinces, or it's the same across the whole country?
I guess it's both regional and generational. By regional, I mean it's less apparent in the more urbanized areas, such as the northern capital region. But for me, who grew up in the province, such as Bulacan, you know, I've been exposed to a lot of colorism. And even up until now, all the older people that I used to interact with still view lighter skinned individuals as better than those with dark skin. And I also say that it's generational because a lot of the kids who are my age, who are maybe in their 20s or early 30s, or even those younger or the teenagers, they have better, more progressive views about color, about skin color. So I guess it's a mix of both regional factors as well as generational factors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. It's really interesting, you know, like how generational differences happen. However, also, you know, I don't know if in the Philippines if this is the case, but in the US, what we see is that even if there is generational differences, older people are still impacting young people's view when it comes to how they look at their skin color, because people are all the time commenting on the individual's skin yes. color, especially if they're darker. So that impact still continues within even young generations. So it can be still a huge issue. So in terms of skin lighting practices, or you know, in general practice, when do you think that issue started in the Philippines?
With the issue of skin lightening products, I honestly have no idea, because if I remember correctly, when I was younger, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of products such as Silka, Papaya Soap, Glutathione, they were all the rave in the Philippines, and they are all skin lightening products. And even until now, these skin lightening soaps, which do not contain mercury, no, they are still very, very prevalent in the market, and they're still widely used in the Philippines. So it's been there ever since I can remember, and I was born in the 90s, so it's going on for around 30 years now, and even maybe even farther. And mm-hmm. that's all I know about it.
Yeah. So how does it happen? How do people access to these products? Do they access through the dermatologist or like clinical settings that were open for them to go and get skin lightening products, or in the market? How do people get access to these products?
Yeah, so if we categorize skin lightening products to skin lightening products that do not contain any harmful chemicals or are FDA approved, then these products can easily be accessed everywhere, even with 7-Elevens or convenience stores or small markets. But with those products that contain harmful chemicals such as mercury, they are technically illegal, so you can only access them through illegal channels or through small markets. So there's a difference between how you can access these products depending on their legality.
Mm-hmm. And how do skin lightening products even come to the Philippines? Like what is that process? How does it even, you know, how do these products even get to the country?
Yeah, I guess so. for the products which are our concern, or you mean mercury containing skin lightening products?
Yeah, mercury and hydroquinone containing products. If you ever tested,
Yeah, so these products actually go through go to the Philippines through a number of ways. So our organization, Bantoxics, we conduct market monitoring. So we have a list of products that we know have mercury, and we constantly look at the at major retailers such as Shopee and Lazada, which are the equivalent of Amazon and eBay, I guess, in the US. So we regularly monitor them. And sometimes some of these illegal products appear at the stores. And what we do is we report them to the FDA, or the FDA finds out through their own monitoring. And the FDA is the Food and Drug Administration of the Department of Health. Yeah. So once these products are found out, they will notify Shopee and Lazada, and they will take down these products. But so that's one problem. And another problem is a lot of these products appear at small markets. Often they are illegally smuggled. So in the Philippines, illegal smuggling of products isn't exactly new. You know, so we have something we call the ukay-ukay, which is basically a place where used clothing and used products are sold. And these are generally illegal, but they are still very, very prevalent in the Philippines. So it's the same thing with skin lightening products. They somehow are still illegally smuggled into the country through various means. No? And even mercury itself is smuggled through the country through different means. So there are a lot of illegal trading channels that need to be assessed if we want to see how big the illegal smuggling of mercury-containing skin lightening creams really is.
Mm-hmm. And is it the case in the Philippines? Because in the U.S., all the products we tested, and also all the products now that I have tested in East Africa, it never said mercury on the ingredient, hydroquinone on the ingredient, and lead, but they all tested either mercury, hydroquinone, and lead. So is that the case, the products that you have tested in terms of the label, and also where they originally coming from?
Yes, so that's also the case. So some of them have their labeling in English, and some of them in Chinese. So of course, we won't really understand Chinese labels.
Yeah.
And for English labels, yeah, mercury is not cited in them. But another characteristic of these illegal products is that they are not certified by the FDA. Because in the Philippines, all of these products should undergo testing by the FDA. And if they are fit for the market, they will have a seal that they are accredited by the FDA. So a lot of these products, they do not have accreditations from the FDA. So that's something to look at for labels in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. So so in terms of FDA, you mentioned earlier, they do product monitoring. What do exactly FDA in the Philippines do actually? And what chemicals have they banned so far that are in the skin lighting product?
Yeah, so chemicals such as most recently they banned mercury. That's more than 1 ppm in skin lightening products. And the FDA, they basically they provide accreditation for products, so they approve which products should be on the market, and they also constantly monitor the market for products that come up that should not be sold. So they regularly send out advisories so regarding these products, which are available on their website. And of course, once they send out our advisories, big stores and all the other commercial establishments stop selling these products. So the main concern really is the smaller products, which are unregulated, the informal markets, where a lot of these products can be found.
Yeah. And in terms of monitoring, do they regularly go to the market and buy and test? Like, what's their testing process in the FDA?
So the FDA has a number of regional laboratories for testing. So I believe before a product enters the market, they should seek for approval from the FDA. And for the other products, the FDA conducts what they call a regular market surveillance and monitoring procedures. And they also accept reports from NGOs such as BanTox6. So BanTox6, we have worked with them previously when we had an XRF. Because our XRF broke and we're looking for funding for XRFs. But when we used to have XRFs and when we outsource XRF testing, we compile them into a report and we send the results to the FDA. And for most of the time, the FDA double checks our findings and they conduct proper action. And another thing that I would like to mention is the FDA is a consistent participant at the ASEAN Cosmetics Directive. So they coordinate with a lot of the ASEAN countries regarding regulating cosmetics.
Yeah, so another word is the FDA in the Philippines is very active in regulating this issue.
Yes, the FDA has been mostly successful. Like I said, these products rarely pop up at big commercial establishments or major online selling platforms. But the real issue is how we can prevent these products from appearing at the informal market levels. Because these are, as you know, informal sectors are very, very hard to regulate.
Yeah.
And most of the issue with chemicals stems from informal markets.
Yeah. So in terms of banning these toxic ingredients in the skin lighting, what are the ingredients in the skin lighting that was banned besides mercury in the Philippines?
So we have a number of advisories. So of course, hydroquinone and mercury, and I believe lead. But anything such as asbestos, I'm not sure. But all of these toxic chemicals, we have advisories from the FDA. So that's a great thing that we have. Like we always say, we have a comprehensive legislative framework for regulating these products. But the main issue is how we can really ensure that they are properly implemented.
Yeah, that's really excellent word. So for ban toxics, Jam yourself, you have been involved in this issue for a while now. When I first met you was in 2019, and so what have you and ban tox done in the last few years to address the issue of skin lighting practices and in general the practice?
Oh yeah, so Amira, you and I met, I believe, in Geneva in
Yeah.
2019 for the Minamata Convention. So back then, the Philippines has not yet ratified the Minamata Convention on Mercury. So at around 2019, BanTox6 efforts were centered on providing support to the national government in the ratification of the convention. So we were engaging in a lot of policy discussions. We were engaging in a lot of community grassroots programs. So, but since then, what we have focused on are in terms of mercury-added products, we have focused on providing research on not only these products, but also on alternatives, on assessing the availability of alternatives. We conduct regular mo market monitoring, and we also conduct a lot of educational programs. Aside from our work with the ASGM, where we educate them regarding mercury, we also have programs such as TFSP, which means Toxics-Free Schools programs, wherein we partner with local academic institutions or schools, and we integrate chemicals-related issues into their curriculum. Because we recognize that chemicals issues and skin lightening issue as a whole is a cultural issue. So we should start at educating the next generation. So that's what the TFSP offers. I don't know how many schools we have under the program, but our overall objective, our vision for the project is, of course, nationwide implementation through partnership with relevant government agencies. So under the TFSP program, we have curriculum on not only chemicals management, but also on, you know, perspectives on skin lightening, which is impacted by mercury and skin lightening products. And since the pandemic started in 2020, we also started regular webinars which are open to the public, where we get speakers not only from government agencies in the Philippines, but also through our partners, such as the Zero Mercury Working Group. And we talk about the dangers of these products. And also, our main strategy for now is to get enough partners and make as much noise until this becomes a nationally relevant issue.
Yeah, that's really excellent, Jam. The work that you have done and also beyond here, what you're envisioning. I agree with you. It's really important to develop, to have coalition and I'm in the midst of developing global coalition. So we collectively, you know, like get advice from each other and combat this issue. So you will get definitely an email from me to invite you to that global coalition. So I think the work that you guys are doing is so important, and it gets to a lot of different areas, especially in these schools. I think that's excellent because you're right, at very young age, kids should understand these problems. So in the future, when they grow up, they don't have to deal with this kind of issues. So Jam, in terms of culturally, ways that is how do you guys right now addressing, or if you're not addressing right now, in the future, how do you plan to address the cultural part of you know, colorism in the Philippines?
So that's a really, really big issue right now, because honestly, as Bantoxics, we still have not figured it out yet, because like I discussed earlier, it is manifested in the home, it is taught in schools, and it is portrayed in the media. So those are the three main exposures for colorism that we need to address. And for schools, even changing perspectives of teachers regarding skin color is very, very difficult. So our vision is still, of course, our short-term vision is, of course, educating consumers first and foremost, and educating distributors, because these are small-time traders most often or not, and they do not know the dangers of the products that they sell. So just minimizing the availability of those products first, because tackling the cultural aspects of the issue is a very, very big challenge, and this requires a lot of resources, a lot of connections, and a lot of money. So like I said earlier, our motto is to get enough partners, make as much noise as we can until we are capable of addressing the cultural aspects of skin colorism.
Yeah, that's a great point you raised. This is an issue that is so underfunded. And so you are right, resource to address this in multi-approach is always a challenging. And that is you know, one of the things that I'm working on globally. So we raise awareness on this issue. So we also find larger resources to really collectively work on this issue. So I totally agree with you. Resources can be always challenging. Jam, you have mentioned earlier about looking into alternatives. When you say alternatives, what do you mean? Could you elaborate that a little bit more?
One of the studies we conducted for Bantoxics was the assessment of alternatives which did not contain harmful chemicals. So this was only an assessment of the availability of these alternatives. But of course, in the long term, what we want to do is not only not just shift our perspectives. Of course, we are not trying to stop people from lightening their skins if that's what they really want. But we also want to highlight that some of the reasons that we want to change our skin colors are due to societal pressure. So aside from assessing the alternatives, our long-term goal is still, of course, to address our views on that issue.
So I always ask follow-up question when people talk about alternatives, because there's no alternatives to, you know, like changing the skin color, because people ultimately wants to change their skin color, and that's I think what we should combat, you know, because we don't want people changing who they are and continuing to promote colorism. So I think, you know, in terms of alternatives, there's no actually alternative to skin line, because if the person intentionally wants to change their skin color, then that's intentionally doing. And so that is what we need to educate people, not only the toxics, but also how do we make sure that person becomes happy with their skin color and understand, yes, you know, their culture, their history, their identity, and all of that. So I think that's an important thing that we should be keeping in mind. So in your curriculum, in the school setting curriculum, do you talk about only the toxics or identity or history or things like that? Or it's just the toxic chemicals in terms of health and wellness for kids to understand?
Now, that's something that we want to slowly integrate into the TFSP curriculum, because currently at the TFSP level, we are focused on the health impacts of the chemicals. But through our webinars, which we started during the pandemic, we are slowly integrating these concepts. And my personal perspective on it is we need to educate people that our perspectives on skin color are a product of, you know, a number of social factors, economic factors, political, cultural factors, and we need to educate people on this. Now, of course, if they still want to change their skin color after everything, then that's none of our, I guess, responsibilities. But
yes,
but we should highlight these factors, because a lot of people they are not aware that these lenses are affecting their choices. No, they are not aware that that society as a whole is affecting how they view themselves, and this is affecting their, you know, their self-esteem, their confidence, and everything. And that is very, very unfair.
Yes, very unfair, Jam. I agree, totally agree with you, and that's exactly the work that we do. You know, you are right. Individuals are not even aware of these things, because, you know, colorism, it becomes so much embedded in cultures where people don't even understand, you know, a lot of times. And so it's so important to raise awareness so they understand, you know, like the minute that they understand, you know, we see the results of how they slowly change to stop using these products. And you're right. It's a huge problem that has been going on for many years, since, you know, like colonizations or slavery for those countries that went through, yes, or communities that went through slavery. So you're absolutely right, and I agree, and that is really important work that should be happening globally, not only talking about chemical exposures, but also those problems, to highlight why colorism is so much embedded in our cultures and why we need to undo. I think that's excellent work that John, you and your organization are doing. So is there any other thing that you would like to add in our interview that I haven't asked you that you would like to mention the work that is happening on the issues of colorism, skin lightening practices and chemical exposures in the Philippines?
Yes, so I guess just to add to your previous point, I believe that we should dig deeper because in the Philippines, it's common, you know, it's a very, very common conversation that when you ask someone, why do you think she's beautiful or he's handsome? Because he's he got light skin. So, and that's, I guess that's reflective of how we view beauty in the first place. And beauty is not based on your features, on your physical features, but more based on the color of your skin. And that's a really big issue that we need to address. And currently our organization is not working on that end, but because I believe we can't start working on it unless we first work on the policy side of things, because like I mentioned, the issue is very, very multidimensional. And for small organizations such as ours, we can't work on every facet at the same time. We have to choose what we want to prioritize. And definitely in the future, our vision for Ban Toxics is to start working on this, because this is the root of all the issues for skin lightening products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's excellent point, Jam. You're right. It's a issue that needs multi-approach. And you're right, small organizations, it can be challenging, like we talked about in terms of resource. I think so far the work that you're doing and your vision and the vision of the organization moving forward to combat colorism, skin lighting practice and chemical exposure, I think you listed excellent points. And I think all of these will work, especially, you know, policy is so important, policy changes, as well as educating communities. It's excellent thing. And it seems that you guys have done great work so far by partnering with FDA. So FDA monitors this. I think that's an excellent thing. What other government agencies that are working on this issue besides FDA in the Philippines?
So at Ban Toxics, we work with the DENR, or the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. And we also work with some of our board members actually at Ban Toxics are from the Department of Science and Technology. So, and Ban Toxics has also worked with the all of these organizations are, I mean, all of these agencies are tackling chemicals issues from different perspectives. So for the FDA, they monitor the markets, but in terms of skin lightening products, when they become waste, it becomes the responsibility of the DENR. So it's important to work with a lot of these agencies, because we should look at the skin lightening issues from its production until its disposal. And I think that's the proper way of addressing the issue.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Jam, we're towards the end of our talk today through Beauty Wellness Talk. What are your final words in terms of these issues? What advice will you like to share with people that are listening to you that's impacted by the issues of colorism, skin lightening practices, and chemical exposures?
Our advice, what I always say when asked about this, is that we are all beautiful regardless of our skin color, you know. If at some point in your life you really want to get lighter skin, then let's choose products that do not contain harmful chemicals. But of course, our main stand about this is we should be proud of our skin colors, we should be proud of where we come from and the culture that we represent. And I believe, like you mentioned all throughout the conversation, the skin color issue is deeply embedded in our culture, and the only way to really solve it is to be to change our perspectives.
Yeah, thank you so much, Cham, for joining me today, and the work that you do in the Philippines. Your work is very important, and same with Pantox. It's important work that you guys are doing. Keep doing what you're doing and keep combating colorism, skin lighting practices, and chemical exposures. So thank you so much.